It's the morning show. I'm Keely Boltina in for Kate Archer Kent. Hundreds of protesters marched in Kenosha overnight. Some lit fires. Police used chemicals on the crowd. The National Guard was activated. Demonstrators across the country showed outrage over violence against people of color at the hands of police. On Sunday evening, police shot a black man named Jacob Blake here in Wisconsin. Blake is in serious condition. There's video of police shooting him, and it's graphic. We're slowing down the news. We're going to find out what's going on, how people are speaking up, and how this police shooting fits in with the others. There's room for you in this conversation, 800-642-1234. What's on your mind about protests and law enforcement response over the last 2 days? Do you live in Kenosha? How are you reacting to this shooting of Jacob Blake? 800-642-1234 is the number to call. You can also email ideas at WPR.org. Our guest is Rob Chappell, who's the executive director of Madison 365. Rob, thanks for joining the Ideas Network this morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Certainly. We saw small protests take place already Sunday night in Kenosha. And yesterday during the day, there was a march, and then it kind of gained speed toward the night. What can you tell us about the protests you saw happening there?
It did grow. Last night very destructive, I guess is the only way to say it. Looked like there were a lot of full-on building fires happening. It's hard to say from where I was sitting how many people were involved. It looked like at least several hundred. We did have a reporter, Kanala Phillips, on the ground there in Kenosha during the sort of afternoon and early evening. But she did not stay for the worst of it overnight, but it did look like it got pretty destructive. And I'm not sure how really organized it was. It seemed to be, at least Sunday night especially, but also Monday, I think, seemed really like kind of a raw expression of frustration and anger more than organized protest, if that makes sense.
Yeah, so as you were watching things unfold, you picked up on the idea that people were reacting.
That was my sense. Certainly Sunday, that was my sense, and Monday as well. They Kanala did speak with some people who lived in Mr. Blake's neighborhood, and some of the folks who were going to the protests. And there was a great deal of frustration and anger, but also kind of a sense of unity, that people were coming together in response to something important, and a little bit of hope too, I think, in some of the comments we heard.
Do we know who's protesting then? Do we know if they're local? Do we know if they're from other places?
There was some talk of some people from the sort of Madison Black Lives Matter movement going to Kenosha in support. I don't know how many people actually did that. I don't think very many. I think my sense is that the people who were protesting in Kenosha were for the most part Kenosha people, and the people protesting here in Madison were also Madison people.
Right. There were protests that happened in different places. Mm-hmm. Back in Kenosha, there was an 8 p.m. curfew, but that didn't really have much of an effect on the demonstrations.
Yeah. No, that certainly didn't really hold or have much effect at all.
And we saw demonstrators clash with law enforcement last night again.
Yeah, and the National Guard was called out as well. I honestly am not sure how many arrests there were in Kenosha. I know there were 6 arrests here in Madison, even though at least in Madison, the police had kind of did what they've done for the past couple of months, which was kind of not directly engage, especially early on. There was tear gas deployed around 1 a.m., I think, and crowds dispersed kind of at that point. But also in Kenosha, there was a lot of sort of tactical law enforcement, blocking off certain streets and keeping people at bay. And there were definitely clashes. But again, I haven't seen a full report on arrests and that kind of thing.
The specific numbers. Sure. Yeah. But the images, the videos and the pictures coming out of there are really striking. I mean, you see law enforcement dressed in riot gear. You see protesters with signs, people yelling, masks, some not with masks. I mean, What did you experience when you saw those things start flooding in as you have people covering this?
Well, as an editor, my first priority is keeping my people safe. So I'm, right. I was like kind of running a little command center here from my house and just making sure that Fatima Adesise was my reporter here in Madison and Kanala Phillips in Kenosha, that they were, that they had their badges on, that the, you know, law enforcement could identify them, and also just to keep them out of kind of the worst of it. But it was very, I don't know, predictable is not quite the right word, but it is very, the night unfolded like lots of nights have in the past couple of months, where you have a group of people who are just demonstrating sort of vocally and just by their presence during the day while the sun's up. And then as the sun goes down and as it turns to night, then it becomes a little bit more violent, especially against property. I know Kenosha folks were initially targeting government property and like the courthouse and the a police precinct, but then also some adjacent buildings got damaged and burned as well.
We're talking with Rob Chappell, who's the executive editor of Madison 365, and we're talking about protests that have happened in the wake of the killing, I'm sorry, of the shooting of a black man in Kenosha. He is in serious condition. His name is Jacob Blake. It happened on Sunday night. And we are taking your calls, your questions about what's going on at 800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org. We've got Troy from Muskego on the line. Hi, Troy.
Hello. Good morning. I just want to say that I think it's an outrage. And I'm really getting sick of how we muddy the waters by always talking about, like, the protests and the buildings being burned and all these things going on, but we muddy the waters about the why, about the fact that a man was killed for none other than the color of his skin. That if that was a white person, and I'm a white man, and I live in a pretty rural area, and I'll tell you that if that man was white, he would have not got shot back 7 times in front of his kids going into his car. Yeah. And I just you know, and that's all. And I just think another thing is, we need to stop these "we back the bad" signs and start putting up "we back good cops," that we just back good police officers, but not the badge. Because when you say you back just the badge, it's like writing a blank check for police officers. Thank you.
Troy, I appreciate that. I don't mean to step on your toes, but I do want to clarify that Jacob Blake is alive, but is in serious condition, and the Kenosha News has reported that he's had surgery. That does not take away from the fact that Troy is concerned that this was a racially motivated shooting, and that, Rob, is something that you've heard from people in Kenosha, from the protesters. That's what they're saying.
That's the sort of the baseline assumption, and the data bears that out, you know, that just on a per capita basis, is this more likely for a black male to be shot or just not necessarily even shot, but assaulted or, you know, handled violently by police than a white person is. And, you know, it's just, if you look at the video, the standard legally for use of force, to my understanding, is that a police officer is allowed to use lethal force if they reasonably fear for their life. And it's also true that for whatever reason, psychologically speaking or whatever, societally, black people are often viewed as being frightening. So,
yeah, that certainly plays into this. We're continuing to talk with you, Rob. Rob Chappell is the executive editor of Madison 365. We'll pause here for just a moment as we talk about the protests of the police shooting of a black man in Kenosha. This is the Ideas Network. Wisconsin protesters rose up when a police officer in Minneapolis killed George Floyd, a black man. Now they're in the streets again, this time to demand accountability and answers as to why Kenosha police shot a black man named Jacob Blake. He's in serious condition. And CNN's headline reads, Kenosha becomes center of nationwide protests after police shoot black man in front of his children. And this is not an isolated incident. The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Keeley Boltina. Our guest is Rob Chappell with Madison 365, covering what's happened. And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. What are your thoughts and feelings as this happens in Wisconsin? How do you think we figure out how to do policing better, how to treat people, one another, better? 800-642-1234. We've got Kelsey ready to talk with us from Madison. Hi, Kelsey.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to address the point that government buildings are often targeted and offer the perspective that government buildings are, in fact, our buildings, just like police officers are tasked with protecting all of us. And that, in fact, if each of us don't stand up to, you know, address the major, major issues going on in state-sponsored killings, then we're complicit in that issue, and it's each of our responsibility to do so.
Kelsey, thank you for sharing your perspective on this. Rob, this is something we hear. There's a challenge when it comes to protests in this arena because some people are absolutely fed up and doing whatever they can to try to call attention to the cause. And some people are saying, if you don't protest peacefully, that'll look bad. That will be bad for us. Right. What's your sense of how these protests are happening and what's at stake here?
Well, I can tell you what's been kind of the stance of some of the protest organizers in Madison, and I'm sure that this sentiment is spreading into Kenosha as well. But that whole idea of a peaceful protest is a little bit bothersome, in that even if a protest is not violent, peace is not what those people are feeling when they're protesting, right? They're expressing anger and frustration and rage, and even if they're not destroying buildings, to call it peaceful is not, I don't think, quite right. But also, they're being sort of divided. The protesters are being divided between the good ones and the bad ones, right? All the what are now being called peaceful protests are the same protests that happened 5 years ago when Tony Robinson was killed in Madison by a police officer. And at that time, 5 years ago, they were arrested and harassed. And now they're doing the same thing. And they're the peaceful ones because they're not hurting any buildings. And a lot of those folks, a lot of the organizers, while they may not want to damage buildings themselves, or they might think it's not the best idea to do that, they can understand where it's coming from, and they view it as really part of, as like the next step of the protest, kind of. And those that do target government buildings, and like, for example, a couple months ago when the statues around the Capitol got pulled down, the idea is not just to overthrow the government, but to sort of the government, the state does not particularly represent or serve people of color as well as it should. And it's not necessarily me saying that, but that's the sentiment behind that. So that's their sort of direct action and their direct symbolic action, at least, to say this state, this government does not represent me the way it should.
Right. The way it represents other people, people who right. are not people of color, people who are white.
Yep.
Rob, let's take a step back. Walk us through what we know happened on Sunday in Kenosha that triggered this response.
Yeah. What we know from, I was able to obtain the audio from the police scanner. And what we know is that there was it was 5 minutes from the first call to police to shots being fired. This all escalated very, very quickly. Somebody called a little bit after 5 o'clock saying Mr. Blake was at her residence and that she didn't want him there and he wasn't leaving and that he had taken her keys and wouldn't give them back. About 30 seconds into the call, the dispatcher alerted the patrol officers that there was a warrant for Mr. Blake's arrest that was issued in early July on a couple of charges. And then about 30 seconds after that, so about a minute into the call, the person who called said, okay, he's leaving, you know, and hung up. So as far as she was concerned, it was already kind of over. Police still went there. And then about 4 minutes after that, so 5 minutes after the initial call, the patrol officer alerted dispatch that shots had been fired. what happened in those couple of intervening minutes isn't real clear. There was some witnesses are saying that there was a bit of a scuffle as they tried to take him into custody, that they tased him at least once. And then he continued to walk back toward his car. He opened his car door and tried to get in his car. The video that we have doesn't have audio. That doesn't have good audio enough that to hear what the police officers were saying to him, if they were issuing commands or what, assuming, you know, they probably were. But he's leaning into his car and the police officer grabbed the back of his shirt and just started firing. You know, so that's to give you an idea of what the range that he was shot at. It was like holding with one hand and shooting him with the other. There was another officer there with a gun drawn. And it's not real clear to me whether they were both firing or just one. But we did hear 7 shots. It's not clear how many hit him. But they did render aid right away. About 40 seconds after the shots fired, they requested an ambulance and then assistance from other agencies. And then Kenosha County Sheriff was called in, State Patrol, to secure the scene. And then later that night, the Department of Justice took over the investigation. There were 3 officers placed on administrative leave. Those officers have not been publicly identified at this point. And I would expect to hear something from the Department of Justice, who will then turn over the case to the district attorney in Kenosha County within the next 30 days.
Rob Chappell is the executive editor of Madison 365. We're talking about what happened on Sunday when Kenosha police shot a black man and what has happened since then with protests in different parts of the state, even protests around the country showing solidarity for demonstrations against racial injustice when it comes to police. And we have Cheryl from Zion, Illinois, who wants to join this conversation. Cheryl, what are you thinking about?
I'm thinking about not only did the officer pull on the young man's shirt, he actually ripped it, you know, and administrative leave, you get administrative leave for murder. Now, you know, it's a big deal that, you know, they're saying this guy is still alive. I do not believe that. I believe that the truth is not coming out, because the minute they admit that this young man is dead, things are going to get crazy. But you know,
Cheryl, I'm going to go ahead and jump in here because I want to make sure that we clarify that even Blake's family has said that he is alive, that he has had surgery. And I don't know that that takes away from the severity of this circumstance where a man was shot by police. And protesters are calling it another circumstance where we're seeing racial injustice when it comes to police and community members. Rob, what are you hearing from people in these neighborhoods in Kenosha? Do they feel like they're fighting against their community, or are they standing up in support of the community? What is the sense there?
I can tell you that the latter, I think, is what, at least that's what our, as I mentioned, we had a reporter, Kanal Phillips, down at in Kenosha. And if I can, but it's her story from yesterday is on our website now, madison365.org. But a couple of quotes from there, a neighbor of his basically said, we're just standing up for our community, not against our community, you know, and saying this, that she wants people to understand that people are out in the neighborhood just living their lives, not necessarily doing anything wrong. And this is, you know, what happens. And there was another man that she talked to named Terry Andrews, who's, lived in Kenosha most of his life, said this has kind of been a reality check for him. But he said, we're going to win this battle. This is Terry Andrews talking. It's all about unity in this city. And we stepped it up now. We showcased how unified this city is. So he's seeing this protest, this mass like action as a unified effort. And to him, that seems like a positive thing.
And we're seeing law enforcement releasing statements. We know that the State Department of Criminal Investigation is looking into that. So we'll be looking for that. They say at least within 30 days, they'll be able to issue some sort of finding about the investigation. Yeah. Politicians are speaking out about this. I mean, we're just 2 days out from this incident. Where do we go from here?
Well, the governor has called a special session of the legislature, which he did once before. It was basically just gaveled in and gaveled out. The state police union, the statewide police union, which does not represent the officers in Kenosha, but represents others, is basically calling for that session to go forward. They're in favor of a special session on police reform. The Speaker of the Assembly, Robin Voss, has called for a creation of a task force of some sort. And, you know, mayors from across the state have weighed in, and just and what's really interesting is that you didn't get the equivocation that you normally get. It was a statement from the governor and from lieutenant governor and from several mayors has been, you know, this is systemic racism, this is violence, and this is unacceptable. There wasn't the normal, like, well, let's wait to see all the facts kind of reaction.
Rob, thank you for breaking this down for us. We appreciate your time.
Hey, thanks for having me. Have a great day.
That was Rob Chappell, who is the executive editor of Madison 365. And we've been talking about protests against racial injustice that are happening in Wisconsin after Kenosha police shot a black man during a stop on Sunday. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Keely Boltina, and this is The Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Join us tonight at 8 for live NPR coverage of the Republican National Convention. It's a mix of live and virtual events planned as delegates are expected to confirm Donald Trump as the party's candidate for president. That's tonight through Thursday night, starting at 8 o'clock on Wisconsin Public Radio and online at WPR.org. This is The Morning Show. I'm Keely Boltina in for Kate Archer Kent. Health officials are telling us to stay home when we can, to limit interactions with other people, and when it works, meet outside where the air moves freely. But the fun of going to the movies is pretty much the opposite of those recommendations. It's all about jockeying for a spot at the concessions counter and packing into a theater with a bunch of other people and sitting inside in the dark, ready to experience whatever flashes onto the screen. That's not how it works these days. Theaters are adapting because of the new coronavirus, so we're talking about how the movie-going experience is different these days. And we're taking your calls at 800-642-1234. Have you gone to the movies lately? Are you itching to get back into the theater? What do you want to see happening at theaters to make sure that you feel safe spending money on a ticket and concessions and going inside to watch a film? You can call 800-642-1234 or you can email us at ideas@WPR.org. Our guest is Rolando Rodriguez, president and CEO of Marcus Theaters. Marcus Theaters is operated by Milwaukee-based Marcus Corp. Rolando, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Well, hello, Keely. Nice to have me on, and we really appreciate the time.
Absolutely. Thanks for being here. In June, Marcus reopened 6 theaters nationwide, including 4 in Wisconsin, and you're opening more. Why is now the time to open these up again?
So, good question. You know, if you think back, dating back to March 16th is when pretty much all the theaters across the entire country and, frankly, across the entire world shut its doors. So if you start looking ahead, it's been 5 months pretty much since the industry has been fully shut down. Certainly along the way, there's been a couple of test theaters. As you just noted, in June, we opened up 6 test theaters. And when we opened them, Kaylee, just so you know, we followed all the CDC guidelines. We clearly followed all the state and regulatory aspects from the health department. And then we spent a great deal of time leading up to those 6 theaters opening up, putting our own plan in place. And that's a health and safety plan to ensure that we could certainly take care of our guests in a health and safety environment while obviously having a great entertainment experience.
Let's talk more about those safety procedures, but I do want to talk about those theaters briefly because, you know, you opened at a lower capacity, you've created guidelines to keep people safe there, and 2 of the 4 Wisconsin theaters you reopened in June have since closed. So what is the other side of that safety measure? Why have those closed, and how do you make sure that you stay on track with those measures?
Sure. So, first of all, they've reopened now, and one of the reasons shut it down for a couple of weeks. And the purpose behind it is, frankly, the reason we shut him down is because there were no films out in the marketplace. We were, in essence, playing library films. And And so we decided to obviously consolidate. And one of the key components of having those six test theaters was really to test our processes and our systems. And as you noted, the safety protocols, where we wanted to make sure that the safe distancing was in place, the fact that, you know, the fully sanitation process was in place. And frankly, we had a lot of feedback from both customers and our associates that we fine-tuned early on to make sure that it was perfect. And since then, obviously, last Friday, we opened up 35 locations. And we're opening them in phases, Kylie, to make sure that all the process systems, health and safety measures are properly in place, while actually there's new films that are coming into play. So, for instance, Unhinged, which is a small independent film from Soltis, opened up last Friday and actually performed fairly well as we kind of jumpstart the industry again. So please know that really the ones that we shut down again were really more so because of the business element and no new movies were actually in play at that point in time.
Sure. So not only are you dealing with trying to make sure that, that employees and customers are safe, but you also have to have something to show them in the theater.
Well, and that's the key. I think when you think about what's happened to our industry over the past 5 months, there were obviously three critical components that happened to us. Number one, obviously, this virus that was and continues to be obviously a very challenging situation for our entire country. And frankly, just about every consumer-facing business in America. And so when you think about that, we needed to make sure that we put in place and developed safety protocols that were above and beyond anything that we've ever done before. So that's number one. Number two, we had to obviously make sure that we work with the state and local regulatory governmental agencies to make sure that we were satisfying what their requirements were in order for them to give us the go-ahead to be able to reopen. So one of your earlier questions is why now, you know, we finally got to a place where most regulatory agencies across the states, based on the plans that were outlined, both as an industry and as Marcus Theaters, has proven that, look, we can provide a health and safety environment while entertaining yourself. And then thirdly, the most important one is, you know, while people really enjoy those library films and they enjoy the nostalgic aspect of it, clearly one of the key components of the movie theaters is kind of staying current and making sure that there's new films that attract people into the movie theaters. And so that was really a huge missing piece over the course of the past probably month and a half. And the reason those films had not come out is because most of the states were still not, from regulatory aspects, available to open. And so these film companies have large investments, and they wanted to make sure that when they released their films across the world, not just in the U.S., that most countries, most states, most locales were actually able to operate in order to release their films.
We're talking with Rolando Rodriguez, who's president and CEO of Marcus Theaters, and we're talking about what the movie-going experience can be like these days as we are still fully in the COVID-19 pandemic. We're taking your calls at 800-642-1234. Have you always gone to movies? Has it been hard not having theaters open for you? Are you interested in getting back in as long as you make sure that there are the right safety protocols in place? What do you want to see from theaters? 800-642-1234 is the number to use. You can also email ideas@wpr.org. Rolando, let's talk more about those safety measures. They're posted on your website. Let's take a listen to part of a video that's available for people to understand what they can expect.
It's time to escape back to the movies. But before you do, let's make sure it's a safe and comfortable experience. First, if you are not feeling well for any reason, please stay home. Refunds can be provided if you have already purchased a ticket. Once you are on your way, remember that masks are required and we will be social distancing throughout the movie-going experience.
Social distancing throughout the movie-going experience. Rolando, what will seating look like inside a theater? Not so packed anymore.
No, it isn't. And I think that's one of the key components is that the occupancy aspects, no different than restaurants have been regulated and retail has been regulated. We're operating pretty much at about 50% of the seats that we, you know, that a normal theater would have. So technically, if you have 1,000 seats in that theater, you would operate at about 500 seats. Now, it's important to kind of note that, and I'm glad you asked that question, because the seating is almost checkerboard. And what I mean by that is it's basically couples that can sit together. There will be no one in front of you in the two seats in front of you, no two seats to your right, no two seats to the left, and no two seats behind you. So the bottom line is equating to that 6 foot distancing that you're looking at. And if you look at the theater itself, it's actually much safer than being in a restaurant in many cases, right? Because you're not actually talking. You're actually staring at the screen, looking forward, staying very quiet with your mask on, and enjoying a quiet and fun movie-going experience. And then the safe distancing, please know that that's throughout the entire theater. We have the markers for the six-foot distancing. We have sanitation crews that are constantly sanitizing and cleaning the entire environment, well over and above whatever we used to do. In the restrooms, the same thing, the distancing is practiced. So we're trying to make sure that ideally, and most importantly, we're asking our guests that they buy their tickets in advance and actually their food and beverage that can be done through both our app and through our website. Therefore, when you get in, it becomes a low-contact, low-touch type of an experience. Ideally, you come in, you've already have your tickets purchased, they're on your app. You can walk through our ticket counter where the usher actually has a plastic cover between you and our associate. You go and pick up your food, and then you go into the artist. So ideally, you know, the traffic element of it will avoid any type of crowds, and ideally an easy experience right into the auditorium to enjoy your show.
And how does that minimizing contact between employees and patrons affect employment for people at your theaters?
You know, actually, I think that one of the greatest things that we've experienced is when we first opened up those six test theaters, we surveyed both our guests and our associates. And believe it or not, we received almost like 97% excellent scores because of the measures that we had taken. And so our associates have given us great feedback in ensuring, you know, seeing what we're doing. So, for instance, the temperatures are checked for employees when they come in. They have to fill out the questionnaire. They need to let us know if they've had any symptoms. And if they do, obviously, you know, they're not allowed to work on that day. So everybody really realizes the need to respect one another and make sure that we're supporting one another. And what we're seeing is that our associates are feeling, number one, great about the steps that we've taken on the health and safety aspect. But I got to tell you, the most important thing as well is that they're just happy to be back to work in a great entertainment experience and having fun while, you know, doing some great service to our guests.
We're talking with Rolando Rodriguez, who runs dozens of movie theaters, and we're talking about the pandemic's effect on the movie-going experience, what happens now as theaters work to open up again. Still time for your questions, your thoughts at 800-642-1234. This is The Morning Show. I'm Keely Boltina, and you're listening to The Ideas Network. We are talking about reopening movie theaters and trying to keep people safe from COVID-19. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Keely Boltina. Theaters are changing their processes, preparing for people to come through the doors, sit back, relax in front of the big screen. We're talking with Rolando Rodriguez, who runs a Wisconsin-based company with dozens of movie theaters. And we're taking your calls at 800-642-1234. We have Tony from Egg Harbor on the line with a question. Hi, Tony. And it looks like Tony's gone, but I can pose your question. And that was, Tony's wondering, what are theaters doing about ventilation systems, Rolando?
You know, that's a great question, and I'm glad Tony asked that. So for us, a couple of things. One is we're putting, better filters into the system itself. And they're called the MERV 13. So we are in the process of having those installed. And what that gives is it really collects, you know, anything in the air a lot tighter. Second, for Tony's question, one of the things that we have is very high ceilings, which actually helps out with the airflow in all of our theaters. And then third, and most importantly, is we've had all of our HVAC systems, and in particular with the experts, come in and allow as much outside ventilation air, because I think one of the big components with the internal air is to make sure that there's outside air and proper circulation. And then finally, one of the things that I would say to Tony is that most people are under the impression that it's only one unit that takes care of the entire theater. Just about in every one of our theaters, there's a specific unit to each one of the theaters. And we need to keep in mind that when I gave you the example earlier of a 1,000-seat theater that has 500, that 500 seats may very well be spread out over 14 screens. So the bottom line is that in many cases, the most an auditorium might seat nowadays may be about 40 or 50 people, to give you an idea. And they're well spread out throughout the entire auditorium wearing their masks.
Very interesting. Thank you for asking that question, Tony. We appreciate it as we're taking calls at 800-642-1234. Rolando, you're requiring masks be worn in the cinemas except for when people are eating or drinking something. How do you plan to enforce that once a movie starts, considering it's so dark?
You know, that's another very good question. And I would tell you that that's part of our responsibility with our associates, and what we're doing is we're obviously doing the checks throughout the entire theater, including inside of the theaters. And then we're kindly asking our guests, if for some reason they're not consuming any items and they have their mask off, to please put them back on. And obviously, one of the things that we made clear, you know, out of respect for both the associates and the guests, the other guests, is that you must have a mask on, or we'll be more than glad to refund their tickets to come back at a different time.
We are talking with Rolando Rodriguez, who is president and CEO of Marcus Theaters, and we're discussing safety measures at movie theaters as they are implementing new procedures to try to balance entertainment and business with public safety. And we have Randy in Madison, who has a question for us. Good morning, Randy.
Yes, good morning. I suddenly feel the need to apologize, Mr. Rodriguez, for all those movies I've snuck into.
Confession time.
It is, but I think I'm anonymous enough. Was wondering is, I'm sure you're pretty familiar with movies in the pipeline, and I wonder if there are any in the pipeline that are nonfiction movies about the pandemic and the way that Washington and all of us responded to it.
Interesting. Thanks for the call, Randy. We appreciate it. And Rolando, you know, what about that? What about nonfiction movies coming to the big screen? Any inkling there?
No, that's a very good question. And thank you, Randy, for that. And by the way, Randy, I hope that when you were sneaking in, you were at least buying popcorn and drink. No, one of the things about Hollywood is that it definitely concentrates on current events. So my guess is, while there's nothing that's been announced yet, I would imagine that there will certainly be several films that we'll be watching, you know, probably in 2021 about the pandemic and what's going on. But look, there's actually some nonfiction that are coming out. For instance, there's a movie called 800, which is actually almost a Chinese experience, very similar to the U.S. with the Alamo, where in the 1930s, the Japanese were trying to overtake the Chinese, and they held their position for 4 days with 400 people. And it's an actual story. The movie opened up this past weekend in China, and it was a huge blockbuster of almost $119 million. Again, a nonfiction that, by the way, we're going to be bringing into the big screen starting this coming Friday.
So, Randy, maybe that's an option for you if you're interested in nonfiction films and going to the movie theater. Thanks again for that call. Rolando, Morning Consult is a global data intelligence company. A recent survey shows that 17% of consumers feel comfortable going to the movies right now. How concerned are you that people may just not come back right now?
Sure. Look, I think that there's no question that the pandemic has a tremendous effect you know, in people's psyche. And one of the elements that we have to overcome is, or actually not overcome, but build is the best way to say it, is consumer confidence. And I think when you look at that 17%, there's another probably, I think, 30%, if I looked at it correctly or so, they would say they'd come back within a month because they almost want to kind of hear from people, from other people, how was the experience? You know, was it healthy? Was it safe? Is it safe to come back? And then there's got to be great movies that obviously energizes them to come back. And then, frankly, there's another probably, I think it's like 35% that indicated that they would come back within about 60 days or so, almost the hesitancy of waiting to see what happens and what other people are saying. So, look, it's going to be a buildup in getting consumer confidence. And I think that if we keep scoring those scores of 97%, where people are coming in and saying, oh, my God, this is really healthy, safe. I had a great time, which is, by the way, one of the biggest things that I think our country needs right now with all the social unrest that we're dealing with the pandemic, with the economic conditions that we're dealing with. A little fun goes a long ways. And if people feel health and safe, you know, as they're doing it, I think we're going to be successful. And by the way, one other nonfiction movie that Randy could come out and see, and I think this will energize people, is the David Copperfield story. So that's actually coming out this Friday as well. Again, the personal history of David Copperfield that opens up on Friday.
It seems like your crews are working very hard to create that safe environment, and they can't control for everything. Even with all of the proper protocols, there's potential that someone at some point, whether it's a worker or a patron at your theaters, will have COVID-19. Do you have a plan for contact tracing or making sure that if someone's exposed, you're taking proper protocols to manage it?
Look, we are absolutely taking proper measures. Where I can tell you our HR team, along with our general managers, they've gone through extensive training prior to us reopening. This is something that we take very, very seriously. And if we hear of any type of symptom from any of our associates, we obviously ask them to remain in place. If somebody actually gets the virus itself, then we're going to immediately evaluate the situation and who was around them. And then we obviously have them work with the CDC and the health groups immediately if that happens. Look, the reality is in any consumer-facing business, any business whatsoever, whether it's consumer-facing or not, there is going to be some level of risk. We cannot guarantee 100%. You know, that no one is ever going to get this unfortunate virus that we're dealing with. But no one can guarantee that anywhere, right? Unless you're actually fully locked in your house and never go out again, that's about the only guarantee you possibly have. And so we're social beings. And I think the best thing that we can do is ensure that there's also a mental healthness that goes along with this. And it's our responsibility to provide a very healthy, safe, as ultra safe as we possibly can environment to protect both our guests. And by the way, equally as important to us is our associates.
Yes. Rolando, I want to say thank you for this time. I'm sorry we've run out of time, but it was a great conversation. We appreciate you being here.
Thank you so much. I appreciate the time. Take care.
Rolando Rodriguez is president and CEO of Marcus Theaters. I'm Keeley Boltina. This is The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.